You're listening to Critical Reads. This show is designed to help people critically analyze topics like race, culture, and faith, one resource at a time. I am your host, Neff Lesperance. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Critical Reads, the podcast. As the intro says, I am your host, Neff. For those of you who have been listening to this podcast ever since I started it a few months ago, actually almost a year ago, and are still having this on your feed, I appreciate the support. I know it's been a minute. For those of you who are now, I guess, tuning in, or you've just found this podcast, welcome. In today's episode, I wanted to do something a little different because I know I haven't been posting in a very long time. And so you guys all out there who probably have been listening for a bit and have noticed that I haven't posted anything in a while are probably, you know, wondering, where is she? Where has she been? And so as a special, I guess, bonus episode, as I'm trying to ramp this back up, I wanted to just have an episode where I talk a little bit about where I've been, what's been going on behind the scenes, why I haven't really posted much since I think June was the last time I posted something, and, you know, the plan for the podcast, hopefully moving forward. And so I know normally when I start the podcast, I will do like musings of a tired Black social worker, and I will share a little bit about, you know, things that have been frustrating me, things that I'm noticing, you know, just things that are popping up in, you know, our news, current events, all this stuff. And so today's episode is going to be a little unique in that I probably will be adding or sharing things from what's been, you know, I've been musing about, right? It'll probably be sprinkled in and out of this, honestly, because this whole podcast is probably going to end up being a whole musings, right? And so I just wanted to prepare you guys for that part, because for this part of the show or for this episode, I will not be doing musings, but maybe in the future ones I still haven't decided yet. So anyways, without further ado, the episode that I've entitled this, Girl, Where Have You Been? Right? And so just briefly, I wanted to give a little bit, I guess, of an update. So I know actually the last time I posted something was in May. I double checked. And so in May, you know, I kind of made the decision to leave a job that I was working in at a hospital. I think for as far as my career wise, I was just starting to sense that, you know, it wasn't making sense for me, especially because most of the work I was doing in the hospital was mainly working with patients that were just dealing with acute psychosis or at risk for hurting themselves or others. And as much as I enjoyed working with that population, I think the thing that was difficult is there wasn't really a lot of space for me to really get to know them on the long term. There wasn't really any space for me to work with them longer than a few days or sometimes a few weeks, right? And even then, the few weeks was minimal because mainly what we were focusing on was getting them placed somewhere. And so since most of my work with them was essentially case management and not really working with them one-on-one to kind of see how we can work towards helping them get better and working to some kind of goals, I knew I needed to, you know, kind of make a transition. I think the other thing that kind of sparked it is that working in the hospital is very challenging. I think almost all of us millennials and younger, but I think some even older people can attest to the fact that most of these companies and organizations don't really value us. And I think that's kind of where I was feeling I was at the hospital where I was at. It didn't feel like I was being valued. My skills weren't being utilized in ways that I felt were empowering, I guess. It was more demeaning, if anything. And so after deliberating with my clinical supervisor for licensure and my therapist, going back and forth with them about, you know, my guilt about leaving my job and all this stuff and trying not to be a person that just quits, after a short amount of time, I made the decision to kind of start looking elsewhere. And I bring that part up because I knew like probably 3 or 4 months in that I wanted to quit, but because I didn't want to be labeled as like, ooh, this is just one of those millennials that just leaves their job, I kind of try to stick it out and keep myself in a situation that wasn't really working. I knew it wasn't going to work. But I mean, regardless, I did end up having some good experience in terms of meeting some great colleagues and connecting with a lot of different patients that really changed my life and helped me become a better clinician overall. So that part was great. But yeah, ultimately, I had to make the decision to leave. And I started working at a treatment center where now I am just working with patients one-on-one a little bit more. I provide mental health therapy for them at least once a week. And then I also help conduct groups and things like that to kind of help them just build up their ability to take care of their mental health. Some people also have substance, so help them, you know, build some kind of plan for recovery and sobriety as they move forward in their journey. So that work has been a little bit more rewarding because even though I only see most of them maybe 3 to 4 weeks, I still get to interact with them once a week for individual. I see them almost daily to check in on them when I'm there, like Tuesday through Saturday. And it's given me a place where I feel like even though, I mean, overall, the system still needs work, I'm making somewhat of a difference, especially for the people that want to be there and want to try to change and really want to open up their minds to therapy and getting help and bettering themselves, etc. And so I have been very grateful for this gig, even though, like I said, there's obvious things that I'm like, ooh, I wish this could be better. But yeah, while I was trying to transition into this new gig from about June to about October, I was working 2 jobs. So I went part-time at the hospital. I was working at the treatment center full-time. And then once I officially was like, okay, this hospital has taken advantage of me enough, I'm leaving, I ended up switching over full-time completely to the treatment center. But of course, working in treatment, we're constantly understaffed. And it's been a little crazy for me to figure out that balance of, okay, I need to go home. I need to do other things. I need to do projects. I need to do something and not just be here helping these patients. And I know over time, I'm working on getting better at that, but it's still been somewhat of a struggle to figure out how to still, you know, be a good clinician, care about the patients, work in the system that is broken and that I wish we can fix in some ways, but then at the same time, make time for hobbies and all these different things. So, you know, as I talk about where I'm at, I guess today, I'll eventually get to some of the things I'm doing to try to at least make an effort towards that. But I just want to note now that it's been a work in progress, right? And I think the other tough part about this too is in the midst of all this stuff, I actually also ended up losing a friendship. And I think, you know, the decision that had to be made for my friend to, you know, I guess, disconnect from me, I think she needed that for herself. So I don't fault her for that. But I think the thing that was really hard in the midst of all those other things I was juggling and living at home was the fact that I felt like I didn't have a chance to actually do anything about the problem, right? And so my friend actually was moving to another state, Chicago, actually, where I went to grad school. And in the midst of her move, she like, you know, confessed to me or let me know that, you know, 2 things, you know, I'm coming out as bi, which I kind of sense was coming, no issues there. And then she had shared with me that she wasn't a Christian anymore. And I think, obviously, I know being a person that grew up in the church and, you know, I've probably done ministry for at least 15 years of my life. Obviously, when you hear that somebody that you know and you care for and you grew up together in the faith say, hey, I'm leaving, obviously there's questions and all these different things that come up. But at the same time, I understood where she was coming from because I knew that, you know, the church isn't kind to us women. The church isn't kind to the LGBTQ community. And she's also a Black woman. So there's a lot of things that has hurt her and has shaped a lot of the experiences that she had, that like, it makes sense. And I knew, like, in the time when we were talking, I mean, I struggle with it as well. I'm wrestling with it as we speak, as I'm talking on this podcast. But I think the thing that was tough is, you know, we had that conversation over the phone for the first time a few days before she was leaving. And I mean, I would like to say that I did my best to handle it well. You know, I listened to her and I understood where she was coming from. I wanted to communicate with her that regardless of her leaving the faith or her being bi, that those things didn't bother me at all. I wanted to support her regardless of, I know what the church says and scripture, I guess, and all that stuff. I really just wanted to love her, but it just didn't end up working out. I think, and I know I will own, like, there was a lot of Christianese or like language that we use in the church that would still like slip out when I talked with her. But it wasn't at a place from like I was being malicious or anything like that. It was more so, you know, she and I work together in ministry and we work together in Bible study and all these different things. So at least for me, I was like, I would have loved an opportunity for us to actually, you know, talk about this more. And for you to give me a chance to, I don't know, correct things and kind of hear where she was coming from. I mean, I feel like we just had that one conversation and it was like over and I kind of failed. But yeah, after some time, as I was working at the treatment center, she ended up, I guess, blocking me. And we haven't talked in, I think, almost a year now, maybe, or a little bit more, or a little less, I guess. But yeah, so it's been a challenge to kind of navigate these different things, navigating, you know, the pain and the hurt. And I think part of why I was like, I'm recording today is because I feel like today was the first day I actually like processed stuff and actually felt about it. And it's hard because I do miss her. I do miss her a lot. She was a friend that I've had for 11 years. But I also recognize how tough it is for people in the LGBTQ community to be surrounded by people within the church, and sometimes even outside of the church too, that are just so caught up in being full of hatred that they don't care how they make people feel. And so when there are people who are just genuinely trying to make sense of things and really want to figure out how to love people like I do, we kind of get caught in the crossfires, right? And I think that's the thing that's hard. And I know as a Black woman, I can understand as well for people that are wanting to do anti-racism work and are fumbling through it. And I can understand, you know, I guess being on the other side of being someone that doesn't identify as LGBTQ, you know, that fear of messing up, how people who are not Black can have their fears about messing up when they have to talk about this stuff, right? So yeah, I think that's just been one of the things I've been wrestling with, I guess, because at the end of the day, you know, there's always woulda, coulda, shoulda, hindsight. I should have said this, I should have said that. Maybe if I did this more, whatever. But at the end of the day, like I said, I know as much as I miss my friend, I want her to be good and healthy and happy and accept herself and just be able to live a life that's free for her. Right. And so as much as it hurts me that we don't talk anymore, and as much as I feel something missing, because I know she was a person that I would always talk with about just like the craziness of trying to do anti-racism work in our spaces, you know, I still want her to just be happy. So that's part of it. Right. So, yeah. So I'm navigating, you know, trying to figure out how to show up for my patients, working through this grief a little bit. You know, some days I'm better at it than others. Some days I don't feel as upset about it. Some days I'm okay. Some days I can still just kind of remember the good feelings or the good experiences that we had together and kind of hold on to those more than others, right? And then there's days like today where I think I cried about this for the first time, right? So, yeah, it's just a battle for sure. But aside from this, those three things, I think one of the things that today I was even recognizing is that I think as a social worker, as a person that identifies as a Christian, it's just been a very tough season for me to figure out, you know, what does it look like to still be authentically myself in this world right now? And it's not because I want to be bigoted like a lot of these Christians or sometimes even social workers want to be, but it's more so because, like, I genuinely have a heart for what is going on in all these different marginalized communities, but I also feel like God fits in that somewhere. And it's really difficult to kind of figure out how to do this in a way that is honoring everybody. I mean, the best that I can is I do love people as best as I can, and I own up to my mistakes as best as I can. So even with my friend, if there's something that I did to upset her, like, that's something that I would want to own for sure. But still, it's a challenge. And I know, if I'm being honest, that I haven't really been to church for the past like 2 years. The last time I went to church, I think it was in 2021, and maybe it was in January with one of my friends who lives in Orlando. And I remember when I walked into the church, I just felt so uncomfortable. I think it partially is because I was probably one of the only 3 or 4 Black people there. But it just didn't feel like a place of love and acceptance in the way that I was so used to church feeling for me. And so I think, I recognize where other people who aren't in the church because of their hurt as well and their traumas feel the same. But then it's also, again, this hard thing of, like, I've been in this world and doing church things since I was a kid. And so to be in a space where I'm in my 30s and I don't feel safe in church is crazy. And so today, for the first time in a while, I was just listening to some music, and because today's kind of been a rough day. But I was just listening to some music, and I happened to be listening to some worship music today, and my heart is just like at a place where it's broken, and it's so hard to be a person that is drawn to God and have really resonated with a lot of worship music, and to see how people day in and day out, or even if you just go on Sundays, you're singing songs to a God that really invite you to reflect on what you're singing. And it's like, we're not doing that. I mean, this past week or past month alone, we have, I'm living in Florida, these stupid trans and LGBTQ bills that people are trying to pass, like, no, not saying gay and not allowing people to use bathrooms. And I and just the Tennessee shootings and how the Tennessee 3, the 2 Black guys gets in trouble and all these different things. And it's so crazy to me because it's like, how can we sing these songs about love and seeing God's heart and seeing the brokenness of the world and wanting to fix it, and we're focusing so much on, like, hatred? It makes no sense. And I know every time I'm on Instagram or I'm on TikTok and I'm seeing people saying, like, there's no hate, like, Christian love, it breaks my heart. Especially because I want people to be able to actually experience love from Christians. But we can't freaking do that. Like, most of us are not doing that because we're so busy making Christianity a business, making Christianity disgusting and tied to white supremacy and patriarchy. And if I have to read another article or something about, you know, a pastor or somebody else doing something to kids and are, like, you know, using their power terribly to do something to women or whatever, it's just, it's terrible. And I guess today, as I was reflecting on some of the songs that I used to love, it broke my heart. I felt like Jesus in the church in the Bible, where he was just flipping tables because he was so angry and broken about this. And it just makes me wonder, like, why isn't the church broken about this? Why aren't we more worried about these bullets that you guys are continually allowing to penetrate people's lives and destroy people's lives over being able to have the right to hold a gun, being able to have the right to have power over people that are marginalized. You know, like, this is crazy to me. And I know as I was studying at Loyola, I was studying nonprofit stuff, and just knowing that churches out here that we're nonprofits, we get an opportunity to not get taxed. And there's multiple of us that are on these streets and we're doing absolutely nothing a lot of the times. It pisses me off. And not to say that there aren't some churches out here that are doing great work, but it's not enough, is my point. And so I think that's where I'm kind of wrestling again, like I said, with what does it look like to authentically show up as myself? Because I know in the church space, I don't fit in, at least especially the church space here in Florida. I don't feel like I fit in here. But then in the secular space or the non-Christian space or whatever you want to call it, I don't always fit in, because there's always going to be a barrier. Because the moment I mention I am a Christian to some people, I know, like, unfortunately, it comes with a lot of baggage for them because of the experiences that they've had in church, the experiences that they've had with other Christians who claim so highly that they love and respect people and God. And I can't fault that for them at all. I completely understand that. But it's like this weird tension that it's unbearable sometimes. And yeah, so that's kind of where I've been. I'm just trying to, you know, hold my head underwater, or whatever the phrase is, as much as I can, and not let my sadness overtake me as much as I can. And I know, I think one thing that one of my colleagues shared with me that I thought was also helped and spoke to where I'm at currently, she shared like an article with us that talks about this idea of moral injury. And it's like, so these researchers kind of looked at what's been going on with these clinicians, what's going on with clinicians and healthcare professionals as a whole, because everybody is dealing with what we call burnout, right? And that's where burnout is essentially a place where we're just having so much of our energies and our strength and our resources kind of pulled from us that we've become to a place where we're very fatigued and frustrated and even cynical of the systems and of our work, right? And so these researchers, Wendy Dean, Simon Talbot, and Austin Dean, wrote an article or an editorial entitled "Reframing Clinician Distress, Moral Injury, Not Burnout." And so it was helpful for me to read this article because they basically share about how moral injury is something that occurs when we perpetrate or bear witness to or fail to prevent an act that transgresses our deeply held moral beliefs. So like they say in the healthcare context, that deeply held moral belief is the oath for each of us that we've taken to make sure that we put the needs of our patients first, right? And so what they notice and what they say here is a lot of the times, instead of us actually being able to do what we need to do to put the needs of the patients first, instead we're kind of forced by our higher-ups to care more about what the stakeholders say, you know, what the insurers say, what the hospital says, what the healthcare system says. Even we have to even think about our own financial security, because obviously if you speak up and you say something, that can risk you losing your job, right? And so I think one of the things that they bring up and that I think is so great about this topic of moral injury is that there's no way to really do self-care enough to deal with that, right? Like if you burn out and you're tired and whatever, taking a break will make you feel better, right? But if you're constantly digging at the things that are on your moral compass, and there's no end in sight, which, you know, it kind of feels like that all the time, there's no way that you can self-care your way out of that, right? So one of the things that they kind of say here, right, like it's kind of absurd to think about using yoga to solve the problem of treating a cancer patient with a declined pre-authorization for chemotherapy, right? you can do yoga to kind of help you deal with some of the stress. But at the end of the day, the patient who we're saying we're trying to put first still has cancer and still isn't able to get the pre-authorization she needs or he needs for chemotherapy, right? So I think, like, as I read this article, it really helped make sense for me, I guess, from a, I don't know if the word would be clinical perspective or a non-biblical perspective, of like how hard things have been, you know, how difficult it is to kind of, again, keep your head above water when the things that are hurting you are things that we have, feels like we have no control over. And if we do try to fight, the system is so structured in a way that your fight feels exhausting. It feels unattainable. I mean, I know one example I even think about too is the Black Lives Matter protests, right? So many people were trying to peacefully protest. And I know whatever looting happened at some point of the process for some of these situations, but there's a lot of people that did it peacefully. And what did we also see? We saw police officers, we saw all these different people shooting rubber bullets and tear gas and all this stuff at people. And because the system cannot have justice in that. Like if we work our way out of some of these oppressive structures, I feel like it's part of it. Jobs will be lost, because I will be honest. I think even as a social worker, if we really work to eradicate poverty, I wouldn't have a job. Like maybe I would see patients here and there to check in, and because I do think everybody needs therapy, even if you're not dealing with extreme poverty and all this stuff, right? All of us can benefit to go to therapy for whatever it is. But there would be a lot of ways that nonprofits wouldn't exist, because you're not constantly getting funding for housing insecurity or food pantries and all these different things. So I think that's one of the tough things about my field, is that we kind of make things work and we kind of have jobs and all these different things because of poverty. And poverty is a kind of like a lucrative business, which is terrible to say. And so I think that is something for me that I've been wrestling with for a very long time, because for me, I don't want to be working forever in the same type of situations. Again, if I could work my way out of being a social worker, because we actually are giving a shit about people and we're actually creating safer spaces for our children, safer spaces for our adults, safer spaces for our older population, I would be so happy. But we're here and it's tough. And so, yeah, I mean, I know for me as a millennial, as a social worker, as a Christian that's struggling, a lot of different categories here, I feel for everybody, because this has just been a nightmare. And again, the more and more I keep seeing all these different things pop up in the news, it just breaks my heart every day. And I know for me and my mental health, I've even had to take a little bit of a break from just engaging with some of the content online, because it's like, I know I saw somebody post something a few days ago that we were only 100 days into this year, we already had 123 shootings. And that's freaking wild to me. In 100 days of this new year. And again, we're not focusing on that. We're more worried about trans people having bathrooms, like, or trans, or not being able to say trans, or outing people that are trans. I don't understand. And so I join that community and I join other people who are outraged at the lack of empathy and the lack of care that our country is showing towards multiple groups of people. And I think it's also infuriating, because I do think a lot of us Gen Zs and millennials, and even some of the people above us, like, we actually care about making things different, but the powers of be do not. And they, a lot of them have more money and all that stuff, right? And so I think that's where my heart is, just like, damn, this fucking sucks. And I'm trying to do my best to not get on here and be like, woe is me, everything is terrible. But I would be lying to you and not being my authentic self if I didn't share how much I've been wrestling with things, right? I think that's also part of deconstructing, that sometimes we have to wrestle with things and name it and say, hey, I don't know what to do about this. I know that's something that even my therapist has talked to me about, is that sometimes it's okay to, even though in the moment you don't know what to do about the thing, it's okay to mention like, hey, this is something that's going on that's bothering me. So eventually you can, you know, do something about the thing, right? And so with that said, I think as I move forward and I think about what's going on and I think about where I want this podcast to go and where I want my work to go in the future and things like that, my heart is still really much with teaching and helping people deconstruct whatever that looks like, right? And so my goal is to start posting things again. I will say this time around, I'm also going to try to be mindful of posting some books that are not as heavy. Not that I'm trying to water down stuff, but it'll just be more like memoirs and even some self-help books and different things so that we can make sure you're getting more of a well-rounded type of content from me, but also it's not like every week, oh my God, here's something else that's rough, because I think that is part of deconstructing too, is we have to learn how to take care of ourselves in the process and also learn from other things that are not just like, here's the terrible history that you guys didn't know about, right? Because I know even like with, you know, reading the books on lynchings and all these other things, like it's crazy to be like, this shit exists and nobody wants to talk about it. But it's also, you know, it's helpful to have other things that we can use to kind of help us along the way to feel better as we're working through this, right? And so with that said, my goal is to, for this next month or so, basically we're going to, I think May is usually mental health month. So for mental health month, I wanted to, you know, talk about a few resources that is centered around mental health and just being mindful of taking care of yourselves and taking care of your minds as we're still navigating all of this fuck shit that's happening every single day in this fucking country. But then, as I had planned to do last year, which I plan to do this year, I really, really, really want to talk about and go through some content regarding the LGBTQ community. I know for me as a Christian, I have had years of wrestling with internalized homophobia. Nothing that I necessarily voiced, but I think because I grew up in a space where things were not hunky-dory with that community, it was very easy to have fears around the community because I didn't understand or I didn't learn about what they experience all the time. And so I do think that's part of what I want to do this coming, the next few episodes coming up, is have some resources where we talk more about what the community is actually experiencing and what does it mean to identify as LGBTQ. And I want to do my best to make sure that I provide resources also for people to support. Because whether or not you identify as LGBTQ or you understand it or whatever the case may be, I do think at the end of the day, every member deserves our respect and our care and our love. And for me, honestly, and I will take this how it is. I hope nobody gets offended by this, honestly. But if you yourself don't think people need to be gay and you yourself decided that you're not going to be gay, whether that's a choice, people think it's a choice or not, I don't necessarily think it is, but whatever. If you're not gay and you don't think people should be gay, that's it. Like, let it go. I don't understand why we have to police other people and their choices and what they decide to do. Because I even think about myself. If somebody asked me to be gay today, I can't make myself do anything. You know what I mean? Like, I'm attracted to men. Like, I can't do, and I can't make myself do something. You know, I can't change that. And I think if we all can shut the fuck up sometimes and think about that stuff, like, you would also recognize the same thing. You can't choose this stuff. And so, and regardless, again, I don't think whether or not we agree with people's life decisions should determine whether you respect them or not. I think the only caveat I kind of have to that is if you are oppressing other people and being an asshole, fuck you. Like, I don't really have anything for you on that one. Regardless, like, I think there's some things that's like, dude, just let people live. I mean, if anything 2020 has taught us is like life is so precious. And in a blink of a moment, stuff can happen and we can lose millions of people. We can lose a lot of people in our spaces. And if you spend most of your lifetime just causing harm to other people, what is the point of your life? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand that. I mean, and I will say I have seen so many people who pass away and they're on Twitter and people hated them because of the terrible shit that they did. And people are saying rest in piss to them, which freaking kills me. But it's like, as much as it's like, okay, yeah, it's good to honor the dead, blah, 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 and, you know, give it a moment of silence for their families, whatever. But it's like, if you're a terrible person, like, it's so hard to be rooting for you. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sorry. Like, I may not participate in roasting you, but I would chuckle because you were a terrible person. And I think more of us need to think about the fact that our lives are short. And let's say God, the universe, whatever, gives you 50 to 70 years on earth, sometimes a little bit more depending on your situation, right? And if you spend almost all of your life being a miserable piece of shit, like, what is the point of life? And we keep on saying that life is precious and we want to do things good and better and we want to, you know, create a generation for our children and all this stuff. Like, we say these things as American ideals somewhere in our shit, but we don't do anything at all to live up to those things. We don't do anything at all to actually show that we give a shit. And that's what bothers me. And then especially when it's coming from people who identify as Christians or any kind of religious person at this point, where all of our texts talk about being moral and just and all these different things. Because I did study world religions. Most of these religious texts talk about us treating people with kindness and respect and love and all these different things. And we just keep missing the mark. Like, it's not important and it's not worth anything. And I don't get it. And especially since we're doing it a lot of times for the sake of money and power, I really don't get it. Because at the end of the day, for me, I think one of the best and the greatest things that we have to offer as human beings is our ability to create and love others. And if we're not taking steps forward to do that, if we're not doing whatever we can to make that happen and to create a world and a society for others where they can flourish and be successful and live in a state of shalom, it's like, what are we doing? I just don't understand it. It pisses me off every time I think about this stuff. And so, like I said, I really, really, really want to continue to use this platform for as long as I can to help you guys, like, just think about this stuff and hear about this stuff, hear people's experiences. And again, it's all about respect. You don't have to understand everything. I'm just asking you to respect other people's lives, respect them as human beings, as image bearers. Because at the end of the day, especially for those out here that are Christians, we are supposed to be image bearers, right? And God died for people regardless of the choices that they're making, right? That's what we believe. And so if God is not judging people, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, it just, I don't understand. So, and then again, I just, I know today I was listening to music, especially from Hillsong, which was conflicting as fuck, but I was listening to some of my old worship music and even thinking about the fact that there's a documentary out about Hillsong Church. And I learned about the shitty stuff that Pastor Brian Houston's father did to kids. He was a fucking pedophile. So to know you have that in your church and then you're singing songs about loving God and loving people the way that Jesus loves people, I don't understand how these things don't compute. How can you create this music in this culture and you say that you want to move forward and love people like God loved the church and you guys are allowing people to violate others without any remorse or any care for others? I just don't get it. I just don't. And so I can be here all day about how mad I am about this. So sorry. But yeah, synopsis is I'm planning to try to come back. I really want to do my best to help us think about this stuff more, like I said. And hopefully you guys can receive what I'm sharing, my vulnerability and my honesty with love and grace still. I mean, I'm still learning. I'm not going to be perfect at this. And like I said, even I'm working through my internalized bullshit like racism, homophobia, sexism. I'm working on it myself. But the thing is, I'm honest about it and I'm recognizing my need to do something different and to challenge myself. And that's what I'm inviting you guys to do, is to challenge yourself. Because at the rate that we're going in this world and in this country, I'm sorry, but it just doesn't feel like there's much left to live for if we're not going to push to actually help people be set free from these traps that we're setting for them, or these oppressive structures that we keep erecting and reinforcing and, you know, giving people a hard time when they want to actually have something better going for them. So I guess when I first thought about coming back and sharing where I'm at in this podcast episode, I was going back and forth about how to end this episode. And a lot of this, I will say, is a lot of raw emotions. I literally had a crying fest right before this, so it's been a rough day. But I think one of the things that compelled me to, do the episode or record today is just, as I was reflecting on the worship songs that I used to listen to, I was just drawn to a few lyrics that I was like, man, I wish we would get it as Christians. And I guess this part of this episode, if you're not a Christian and this will trigger you, I understand. If you're like, let's move along, it's fine. But I know there's a song that a lot of people have been singing a lot lately called So Will I, 100 billion times, right? And it is by Hillsong United, but I think the thing that really compelled me about these lyrics is there's a point at the end of the song where he says, God of salvation, you chased down my heart through all of my failures and pride. On a hill you created the light of the world abandoned in darkness to die. And then he says, as you speak, 100 billion failures disappear. Where you lost your life so I could live it here or find it here. If you left the grave behind, so will I. I can see your heart in everything you've done, every part designed in a work of art called love. If you gladly chose surrender, so will I. I can see your heart 8 billion different ways, every precious one, a child you died to save. If you gave your life to love them, so will I. And so every time I hear that part of the song, and I think about how much we preach about the selflessness of Christ, and how Christ abandons everything to love the unlovable, to love children, to love the orphan, to love the oppressed, you name it. We talk about these every day in church. And with this song, we're singing a lot in church that we want to do the same things. And then we turn around and I'm watching the news and I'm seeing how so many of our church members with their whole chests unapologetically are just ready to erect more and more and more oppressive structures, more and more and more hate. I don't understand how we get here. How can you sing these words every Sunday for some of us? Sometimes even during the week, you're singing these songs and you're not reflecting really on what you're singing. You're spitting in the face of God, honestly, if you do believe in God. And I have nothing for that. I just don't understand it. And that's something that I just really urge, if you're a Christian and you're hearing this podcast and you're a person that's wrestling and you're seeing people in the church doing some of this stuff, and or maybe you're a person in the church that's doing some of this stuff, please, I urge you, please try to be a bit different, because this, it makes no sense to me when I see people that are proudly like, oh, I've been a Christian for 15, 20 years. I've been a Christian for 30, 40 years. And I'm looking at you and I'm like, what fruit are you producing? Where's the love that you are showing? Where are you actually being like Christ as you're saying you want to be? Because as much as you guys don't recognize it, the world is watching you. And I'm not saying that you have to co-sign every little thing, because there's some things it can make us uncomfortable to talk about, whatever. I get it. But to the point that we are you know, adding to hatred. I even saw a video of some woman who was saying that learning emotional intelligence was a slippery slope to critical race theory and all this other stuff. If we're at the point now that we don't even want to have people learn emotional intelligence, we don't want them to learn actual history, like, what the fuck are we doing? And for those of us who went to school and we learned about Hitler and we learned about all these terrible things of these other countries, that things that happened, these genocides, I'm sorry, but I think this is conversation that's come up on in TikTok that I've seen too. How far are we from that again? So we can always say, oh, we got to look at history, so because if we don't, we're doomed to repeat ourselves, blah, blah, blah. We keep saying these things, but and yet we're still walking through and doing these same things that these past people have done, but with different people. And I will be damned if I see that we walk into a season now where it's no longer, I mean, I'm sure you guys will still find a way to be racist, but I don't want to see what happened to Black people happen to the LGBTQ community just because you guys want to be bigoted and assholes. Like, I do not want to see that happen in my generation. There's too much. And again, we've watched millions of people die 3 years ago. For a whole year, we've watched people die. So if that is not even a wake-up call for us to give a shit, I don't know what is. And that is, again, what pisses me off. And I'm not trying to be preachy, but it's just like, dude, we have to do better than this. Like, this is terrible. Every day I'm fighting for my life to figure out what the heck am I doing, Lord, because these people don't want help. Like, your people don't want help. Okay. And I want us, especially if you identify as a Christian still, I need us to do better, because the fact that we are co-signing rapists, pedophiles, people that are prioritizing money over life, that there's something wrong with that. Like, Jesus would have lost his shit, honestly, if he saw this. Okay. And so that's something that I want us to be thinking about as we move forward into this new season of this podcast. And of course, I'm welcome to feedback about how you feel about things, sure. But I'm sorry. This is the one area where I'm like, I just want us to be better for our society, because I know even in my house, I get pressure about having a kid a lot of the times. And I'm like, what environment am I putting a kid in? And it's not even to say I'm scared to put a kid here because we're going to be talking about trans people. No, I'm scared to put my kids out here because you guys are full of hatred and just bigotry. And who knows, I'm taking my kid to school and you guys just let people shoot him up and it's fine. I can't. This is wild to me that we still are having a hard time to find the common sense to give a shit about people. And on that note, because I could be here all day, I thank you guys for listening to this episode of this podcast. I hope what I shared today, although it was very raw, was okay. And like I said, I will be back. I will do my best to post things. It may not be every week because I'm also balancing school on top of this work, but you know, I look forward to giving you guys more updates on what's going on in my life and providing you guys with more resources to just learn and grow. And please, 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 if you're in a state where they're doing shitty things to people that are LGBTQ, which probably is every fucking state at this point, do your best to support something. I know for me, I'm a little pussy, I'm not gonna lie. The idea of me putting my body in front of anything scares the shit out of me, even as a Black person, for other Black people. But what I'm trying to do, at least on my end of it, is spread word, spread awareness, and then I'm gonna try to see what I can find to also sponsor and donate and whatever, because this world is wild. And I would love to at least get us in a place and in a space where we're just caring for each other and respecting each other, even if we don't agree with everything. That's fine. I'm not asking you guys to agree on everything, but we need to love and respect each other. All right, so I hope you guys all have a wonderful evening, day, whatever it is. And I hope you come back and you tune into the next episode of Critical Reads, the podcast. Hey there, and thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Critical Reads. To find out more about me or to consume more of my content, please feel free to visit my website, soulsessionswithneff.com, where I share a variety of things, including blog posts, resource lists, and have a regularly updated calendar for this podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook using the handle @soulsessionswithneff. While you're at it, if you really enjoy listening to Critical Reads, I encourage you to please subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google, or Spotify, and take some time to rate us on these different platforms. Your reviews will really help the show gain some visibility and also give me some much needed feedback on how the show is doing. I thank you in advance for your time and your support. And until next time, this has been Neff with some Critical Reads.